Good morning.
Good morning.
Or good afternoon.
Tyler. Oh, yeah.
Hey, Tyler, how are you? How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Trying to stay warm. How are you?
Good. I'm still here.
Yeah. Well, when are you heading down? Is it October or November you usually head down?
We're going to go October 26th, I think.
Okay.
Hi, Rob.
Hi, Kim. How are you?
Good. How are you today?
I'm great, thank you.
Good.
Doing good. A little cold, but
yeah.
I think the allergy weather will go away with the cold. That's nice.
I agree. I was sneezing even yet this morning, so.
I know.
It'll be dress warm tomorrow, Rob.
Yeah, I know. I heard you mentioned that. So it's going to be like 54 at the max, huh?
I saw that, yeah. Hopefully it's sunny. I'm guessing it's supposed to be sunnier tomorrow, you know, and I'm trying to order it up for no wind so we can make a few birdies. But...
I didn't know that was possible, but...
Oh, yeah. You just got to make a long-distance call upstairs.
It is staying sunny, though, tomorrow. Mostly sunny, so that's good.
Nice.
That's great.
Yeah, it should be nice.
So, you guys were in the middle of your bulk transfer the last time.
Yes, we were, Rob. And I think, you know,
Hey, Trent.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thanks. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah,
I cut you off there.
Oh, no, he just asked about the bulk transfer. So I would say, you know, 90% complete on it, and we were able to survive it. We still have a little few things just kind of lingering out there, but for the most part, things are working. We've got Salesforce working. We've got new accounts we can now open. I mean, just some things that we were having issues with. So we have made some progress there. It did put us behind on other items, though, unfortunately, but we're trying. And we have an intern in here now that helps us 2 days a week, and that seems to be helping Terry and Linda because they're backed up now as well. And it's unfortunately when one thing goes wrong, it impacts other things as far as that goes. But I think, you know, hopefully by before tax time, I guess, or before year end, we can get caught up would be the goal.
Yeah, good, good, good. Are you sticking with your 12-4-2s?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what's helped us, I think, maintain stability through this has been having a constant process. And hopefully having not many clients notice the strain under the surface that we've gone through in the last few months.
Right. That's the idea. They don't notice anything.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping. So I think a couple of people would frustrate them with the account number changes, not seeing it online for a few days, and not being able to maybe download it to Quicken on those few days as quickly as they thought. But once we get through that, yeah, we haven't gotten any major client concerns about it, which is most important.
Yeah, it's been interesting with the volatility last week in the market. We tried to put pieces out to the clients, but I didn't get a lot of calls. Did you, Trent or Tyler? I mean, I was kind of surprised, you know, questioning kind of what was going on. So
no, I did not.
No, most of my discussions around it were for just during my normal 12-4-2 calls. I think people know that they can just hold off, and if it's coming up in the next week, just wait for that.
That's exactly it. That's what I think that people are thinking, is they know they're going to be catching up with us. The few people that have called already today, we're glad to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they need that. They need that reassurance, you know.
And then Kim made contact. She was proactive Thursday and Friday with people that had cash. And we've been, fortunately, again, through the 12-4-2, telling people we're in somewhat of an extended market. It's run up quite a bit and trying to downplay expectations. So with some money that came in, we held a little bit more cash. And then Kim was able to get that, to make those calls and get that into the market Thursday and Friday. So that's nice, even with the structure of Supernova, that we can be tactical when things come up like that. And then we were going to use that CIO piece that we sent out Friday, the Chief Investment Office, to hopefully create. We were just doing our monthly prospecting business development meeting, that might be a way to create some urgency on the part of people, is that we've got a view on what's going on, and we think this is a healthy correction. We've got a nice piece we can send out, and we think this would be a great time to open an account and give our strategy a try. So that's one thing I'm going to run by you, is how to create that urgency and how to word that. And with this being an opportunity of using this as such and trying to create a little bit of urgency on the part of prospects.
Well, I mean, I think people want to hear from you. So I think that if I'm a prospect, then instead of being hesitant to take your call, I might actually want to know what you have to say. So I think that that's the difference. I mean, you need volatility in order to really get their attention. So for Tyler, who's prospecting all the time, this is, his reception is going to be much better than when everything is going straight up. So I think from that point of view, I think that's the idea. They'll be more interested in talking. And if you have a, you know, an interesting viewpoint and have some good ideas, then I think that they'll listen. And they may act based on your strategy. So I think that, look, the reality is the market goes up more than it goes down. So as a casino, it's rigged in your favor. The problem is timing. Some people come in the casino at the wrong time, and they leave at the wrong time.
Rob, I think you're cutting out.
Oh. No.
I don't know if it's connection or what, Rob, but we can't hear you.
Okay, let me get on the other phone. Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. That's better, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I think, look, the reality is, you know, we talked about this forever, that, you know, the last time they gave us the punch bowl, low interest rates, and then they gradually took it away, and they're doing the same thing. So the idea is to stay at the cocktail party as long as you can, but know it's a cocktail party, and if you drink too much, you're going to have problems. Okay? So, knowing that, I think you can come up with some strategies that will make the client feel safer and still keep them engaged. And so for Tyler, I think people would like to hear, they hear about hedging strategies and use of options and use of callers and things like that on concentrated positions. I think this is the perfect time to discuss those things, knowing full well that long term, you know, the market went from when I started at 550 to now 25,000 and change, right? But they didn't buy at 550. So they're interested in how they're doing. So I think if you want to get an interesting reception, be interesting, right? If you want them to be interested, be interesting. Buy and hold is not interesting. It's a strategy, but it's not interesting. Having something else that will give them some kind of strategic advantage that other people aren't talking about is a good thing. Okay? I've always told you, if clients are bearish, all you need to do is short one stock and they'll become very bullish. Because you know how it goes, right? By the time they short, it's going down. I mean, it's going up again. So I think that, you know, as a firm, as a team, you should have some interesting strategies. Does that mean that it's right for your conservative clients that are asset allocated properly? No. But when you're prospecting, it makes it a very interesting thing. And for your clients that are looking for interesting, then you have some good ideas for them. I mean, doing the inverse of the S&P 500, right? Those are interesting ideas. So, anyway, that's just my thoughts. If I was prospecting today, I would not be prospecting with a, you know, everything is fine attitude. I would take advantage of the volatility so that they would listen to me and say, hey, you know, this is a time to be thinking about how to work in a more mature market. And this is a great strategy. So whatever you come up with, you're the guys that are running the business. You're coming up. I'm just telling you what the psychology is right now and what will get somebody's attention.
Right.
So tell me what's on your mind. What have you been doing marketing wise, and what can I do to help?
I think our biggest focus is to bring in. We need a couple more households. We have goals now that you have to bring in so many households, each year. So we. Just a couple of sides that we're working, you know, focusing on that to get that done by year end. So it's probably that's, you know, kind of why we're putting an emphasis on trying to reach out to these prospects and get them to move, you know, forward in the next couple months.
And what are you doing to do that?
Well, I think that's one thing. Tyler's going to reach out to some of these people today just to, you know, to create that urgency. And that's why I think Trent was asking you kind of what you thought mm-hmm. on, you know, ways to do that right now in this environment. Because they feel like there's some that, have, you know, kind of give the indication, yes, we're going to move. But then, you know, getting them to fill out paperwork and do what they need to do is, you know, the next step. And so trying to get them, you know, kind of off of that, yes, I plan to do it, to yes, I am going to do it. So I think that's a big focus going into year end, trying to get those couple of those, you know, completed.
Yeah. And I guess that's kind of, you know, what I wanted to pick your brain about a little bit, Rob, is and you hit on it a little bit is being interesting, but you know, right now is a prime time to kind of push people over the edge, you know, if they're thinking about the decision. But with you being on the other side of the table as a client, you know, what would kind of do that for you? You know, what you mentioned some more kind of creating the safe side of things or making clients feel safer being on later in a mature market. But, you know, if you were making calls to prospects that had basically committed but just hadn't moved yet, you know, what would that conversation look like for you, or how would you go about that?
Okay, what are they committed to?
Well, to moving the money. I mean, it's just, you know, there's a number of different things that we're kind of waiting on that it's going to come in, but we'd like for it to come in by year end. And so it's like you said, it's creating that urgency because, you know, they've got a million things going on in their life, and this is probably not number one. And so how do we kind of move that up the ladder?
Well, everybody's an individual, so give me a case.
So a few of them are just business owners, where it's just, you know, business has just been so busy with it, and between hiring and trying to meet production and, you know, on the industrial side of things, that the personal portfolio just, it's kind of taken the back seat to them working 12 or 14 hour days.
Okay, so give me an exact example.
Yeah, so I've got a guy down in Columbus who, you know, late last year basically committed, was asking about fees and everything, and it was just going to be meeting with him and his wife. And so it's been trying to coordinate calendars for, you know, nearly 12 months with him working 14-hour days and you know, coordinate with her as well and just trying to catch him. And so, you know, that would be $1 million or $1.5 million, and he has no trust in his current advisor. But, you know, I think now is going to be helpful because of the volatility. Before this, everything was going up, even though he didn't trust them. So kind of, you know, what would that conversation look like for you?
Where is the money now?
Well, it's at Edward Jones and Schwab.
Okay, is he in equities?
Partly. Kind of a 60-40 mix.
Okay. Well, I mean, this would be a perfect case of, well, first of all, you've met with him?
Yes.
Or you haven't? You
yes.
have. And you met with him there, or did you meet with him here?
Yeah, I met with him at his business.
Okay. And now he won't meet.
Yeah, I mean, it's always trying to coordinate with him and his wife's calendar, and we can never get anything solidified.
So you call, they accept your call, they say they're going to set up an appointment, you suggest a date, and then they don't get back to you, or...
Yeah, exactly.
They don't get back to you.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Did you ask him what is the, and you asked him what the problem was, and he said, I'm working 14-hour days.
Yeah, it's just, you know, he's owned the business for 30 years, and he says he's never been this busy.
Which is really a good sign, isn't it? Really
yeah, hard. I mean, last time we talked, he said that they had their yearly revenue number beat through 10 months of their fiscal year for all time.
Is he a sole proprietor?
Yes.
No partners?
No partners.
What business is it?
So they are a supplier for Caterpillar and Cummins. They make, I don't even know what the pieces are called, but it's essentially just the automotive equipment and manufacturing.
It's a really good sign. There's not an easy answer to this one.
I've been trying to stay patient with it, but it's, you know, I feel like I've got a few of these kind of in the pipeline where it's, you don't want to push too hard and kind of put a bad taste in their mouth, but
right.
You know, you want to create that urgency.
Do you have any hobbies?
He doesn't like golf. That's a bad thing.
Right. Okay.
yeah, I mean, he likes. Sorry. Go ahead, Kim.
I was going to say, have you tried, like, just saying you're going to be down that area, you know, one evening or, you know, that type of thing and see if they would be free?
Yeah, and he doesn't really want to meet without his wife there because he basically wants her to – he's good with it, but I don't know if she really knows everything that we had discussed. And so he doesn't want to meet without her there. And
did you ask permission to call her?
No, I haven't, but that's a great idea.
Yeah. I would ask permission. She may be the one that runs the money.
Yeah.
I mean, my wife runs everything except the money. She writes all the checks and does everything, right? He's running the business. She's probably running the household. My guess.
Yeah.
Unless he's a freak and wants it all himself, you know. So I would call and ask permission to coordinate it directly with her.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Okay, what's the next one?
Oh, I got a couple of them where checks are just in the mail. Trying to go through and find a good one that's a little bit different.
What about that RV guy that was an RV business?
Nathan. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we met with him. He never called me back, Trent, after he called back this week. So we met with a guy out. Bank of America actually does his financing for the business side of things. He owns a pretty big RV distributor. And, he's really young. He'd be a great client. And we met with him, and everything went really well. And he asked for us to send him paperwork, and we did, and then he kind of went dark. And haven't heard from him, and gosh, Trent, what would you say, 6 months?
Yeah, that's probably March.
And so finally he called back like last week, and I think I was in another appointment or something and missed the call, and so tried to call him back and left him another voicemail. But that's kind of one where we're just kind of lost on, I don't even know what direction to take that one, because it was pretty well a done deal, we thought. That was one Trent and I went together with.
How much is it?
It would be, well, Trent, what was it, 500 to a million just to kind of start?
Yeah, that's just what he had in checking.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind
and
of saving.
They had a 401k. He had some portfolio assets already set up. I'd have to look back my notes. I know it was well into the millions.
And I think they're getting to the point where they're really starting to rip distributions out of the business, because I think they had bought it from their father, and it's kind of exploded since then. And so now they're really – and he's like mid-30s.
There's more than one?
He and his brother.
Have you talked to the brother?
Well, this was just on his personal side. So we weren't talking about, business accounts or anything like that. It was just his checking.
Yeah, but you haven't talked to the brother?
No, uh-uh.
Oh, I'd call and get an introduction to the brother.
I'm making notes here.
One of the things that you can do to create a sense of urgency is to not be as interested. Kind of push them back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And you do that by calling and asking about his brother. Tell me about your brother. You're in business with your brother. Tell me about your brother. Do you think your brother would be a good fit for us?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is he a saver? Is he a spender? Is he, just kind of profile. And then ask him to introduce you. Assuming that he's a good pro, ask him if he'd be a good client. And then just kind of assume he's already a client.
Okay.
And when you ask for an introduction now, you're not looking for a name and a phone number. You're asking for a personal introduction or a phone introduction.
Yeah.
Or an email introduction. Personal in person is best. Next is a phone introduction, and third is an email introduction. By showing an interest in his brother, he's going to say, "Well, what about me?"
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to talk about my brother. I want to talk about me.
Yeah. So how would you? I feel like I've met a number of people who. It seems just to be later end of a mature market and the investment side of things. Either they haven't worked with an advisor before and they're sitting on a pile of cash, or they haven't had the best experiences with their current, especially right now with some of this volatility. What would that conversation look like for you as well if it's, well, I wasn't comfortable before, I'm definitely not comfortable now, even though we know that's probably the right time.
Well, as much as I don't like Cramer, I like him in some of his taglines, and there's always a bull market somewhere. Okay?
I like
so,
that.
Yeah, there's always something that you should be doing with your money. Even that, if it's in a interest-bearing account that's a better rate than you can get at your bank. I mean, when you get into volatile times, what you want to do is gather the assets and get them to work. Then you gradually get people comfortable with the stock market and get them in the market.
We've done that recently because we've got it in our money markets now above 2%, which is really attractive compared to most banks and credit unions.
So what you do is, you know, this guy's doing business with Bank America. You can, you know, you should be able to get him to, you know, get that money transferred in automatically, you know.
Yeah.
Just get it working at 2%. Let's just do that. You know?
Yeah.
And it shows that you're interested in him, not necessarily interested in you.
Okay.
And Kim's right in terms of you know, with the former guy, you know, I'm going to be in Columbus. Let me coordinate with, you know, with your schedule. Is it okay if I call your wife? And coordinate with, since she's critical to this, and coordinate with the, you know, with getting this set up, because I want you guys comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And you could do the same thing. I'm going to be in, you know, I'm going to be in northern Indiana. I'm meeting with some clients in your town. What town is he in?
Oh, he's there all the time.
What town?
He's like, oh, Columbus. I say, what time? I'm sorry.
Yeah, what's the other guy? He's in northern Indiana. Where is he?
Which one?
Greencastle? Or Greenfield?
Yeah.
The RV guy is in Newcastle?
Yeah.
So then you just say, look, you know, I'm meeting with a couple of clients. In the later part of the week, what works best for you? I'm going to be in the area. I can do lunch, I can do dinner, I could do just a meeting. And just push him on that.
Okay.
You know, we'd just like to get the money working for you, because at this point we can get you 2%, which isn't earth-shattering, but at least we'll get the money working out of your checking account, you know. So, the idea is, you know, you want the decision maker. I want the brother. I want both of them. Okay, anytime you can get two partners, it's better than one, because then they reinforce each other. Neither of these guys sound like good candidates for the 90-day free look.
Yeah, I would agree.
I don't think it's a matter of trusting you, but you going out of your way to go see him again, I think will prove to them that you're very interested in them. And they're not getting that today.
Okay.
Okay. Another good one, Tyler, is the endless chain referral system. It's just kind of a gimmick, but it's kind of a cool gimmick. It really says to the client when you start doing business with them that they have another opportunity to give to you while you're giving to them. And the idea is that you've just graduated to being a client. I've lost you as a prospect. And here's what I've done in my career to be successful, and you might try this on your own salespeople, something called the endless chain referral system. And the way it works is that when you become a client, you're then part of a chain. And in order to not break the chain, we need to have you introduce me to another client, another prospect. And then we don't interrupt the chain. And they'll laugh and think, oh, that's pretty cool. Well, and that, you know, it's meant a great deal to my business, plus I get to meet some interesting people and get some interesting introductions from it. So who would be a good candidate for the endless chain referral system?
necessarily any business partners or family. I mean, especially with me calling business owners,
right.
I think that's kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah, that's what you ask them. So who would be a good candidate so we don't break this chain? So you're not doing the BIPSA, which is asking for, you know, 5 or 6 or 7. You're just asking for one.
Mm-hmm.
They'll kind of like that. You know, most people are in sales of some sort, right? So they like new techniques. They like that. The endless chain referral system.
Okay.
Came from the Dynamics of Selling, Success Motivation Institute out of Waco, Texas. Just to give them full credit. So I started teaching that in 1978, I started teaching the Endless Chain Referral System. NEST is NEST. We would call that a niche today, but it's a NEST. In those days, we called it a NEST. And that was a group of people that were all affiliated, but there wasn't anyone that was dominant. So it would be chemist in Lilly. It would be a nest. And inside the nest would be what you need to do in order to create a nest is you've got to find out who's the queen bee. And the person that runs the nest. Do you know when you start an actual beehive, the only thing you need to get is a queen bee? Isn't that interesting? I didn't know.
The leader, the influencer.
Hmm.
Yeah, in that case, that's right. And then the other bees, the workers, all find the queen. So if you buy a queen, you have a nest eventually. Not doesn't take long. And they all find her. Then they build the nest. So it's a good analogy.
Definitely interesting input to not just give a positive view, to basically give some kind of contrary, I guess, create a pain point with people that it's not just rosy and okay and you can stay where you are. We are, I guess, inherently bullish, so we have to invent a way to do that. And how we could do that, Tyler, you mentioned this morning on the Investing for Growth screen that we had a lot of cuts, a lot of earnings estimate cuts. So it'd be interesting just to basically highlight what are the top industries getting earnings estimate cuts and having that as part of the pitch that we're seeing a major rotation, even though it's volatile, even we are bullish long term, but this is a big rotation. And a lot of investors are going to be caught flat-footed and not capture the opportunity that we see in the next few years.
And what was the big reason for doing Investors for Growth?
Was exactly that, to be tactical.
Do you remember what he used to say?
Have a reason to buy, a reason to sell, and something to put the proceeds in. So you've got to discipline rather than just shooting from the hip, thinking technology is going
to
do well.
Everybody tells you when to buy, right? Everybody tells you when to buy. Nobody tells you when to sell. And that was Malik.
Yeah, 1995.
That was his hook. That was his hook. That's how, and that, Tyler, that's what you can say. Everybody tells you when to buy. Nobody tells you when to sell. We're getting sell signals in a lot of our stocks now, and we're selling them. So we're an active manager. We're not a passive manager.
We use the analogy a lot of flying the airplane, that a lot of people are on models just on autopilot, but we choose to fly the airplane ourselves. We use a lot of different kind of airplane analogies.
Well, the very fact that you guys are not getting any phone calls, nobody's calling to sell out, tells you that there's a lot of complacency around. And therefore, there's probably an opportunity to be different. So you can always sell, right? Raise cash. You can buy other things when you sell. You can do tax swaps. You can hedge by either going long the inversion of the index. You can sell options. You can buy puts. You can buy futures that, you know, in the opposite, or sell short futures, I guess. You can do callers, which are just no more than options, you know, sophisticated options. So I think there are things that you can do for a sophisticated client that makes them think this guy is pretty sharp, rather than, you know, I own American funds, which is fine because they've done really well. But if you're going to be a financial advisor, I think you need to be proactive. It's like we're proactive on the way up, we're proactive on the way down. So people feel like they hired somebody who's actually doing something. You're in the middle of a storm and the captain's asleep down below, that doesn't make the passengers feel good.
Do you think us not having what could contribute to clients thinking that? I always get to the paranoid part of my brain.
Well, it's,
what do you think you convey that we're not awake?
You're not calling them.
Yeah, with the 12-4-2, we're really not calling people to this week with the volatility.
And if you have a strategy, what is it? And I haven't heard from you.
I think maybe that's why we're not getting as much panic, because I think we go through that pretty well. It must be just that we precondition people through our calls,
right,
talking about the discipline and the strategy, that they have a little more trust in it.
So from a point of view of Tyler prospecting various, assuming you're prospecting some people that have relationships and they're pretty big,
mm-hmm.
This is not what they're hearing from their financial advisor, okay? So in order to be different and to be interesting, I think you have to have some strategies that will not penalize them dramatically if we just turn around and go higher, but will at the same time make them feel like they're taking some action and maybe capturing or protecting themselves somewhat on the downside. Okay.
I like it.
Yeah. There's your sense of urgency. I mean, this gives you a sense of urgency because they're already in, right? And now what do I do? Oh, my FA is not calling me, telling me to do anything. And you say, well, you know, there's some simple strategies we could use to you can buy insurance on your car, or your house, your life. You can buy insurance on your portfolio. Oh, what? What? What are you talking about? Well, yeah, it's, you know, it's expensive, but so is life insurance, so is health insurance. They're all expensive, but it allows you to sleep at night. Well, what would it cost? It costs you about 5%. Really? Okay. I want to do it, or I don't. Tell me about it. Can I do it on a portion? Yeah.
And that's basically the buy and puts, buying insurance on the portfolio.
Yeah, that would be one, or you could do it right, the inversion of the indexes, right? Do enough of it that it would be a hedge, right?
Right.
I mean, that's your business, not mine. I mean, I've been in it, but there's a lot available that wasn't available in 1972. So the question is, you know, does it make sense? Or, you know, and for what clients? Well, different clients have different attitude about risk. So a bond, stock, cash portfolio would not protect the person in this market, right?
It wouldn't protect them today. It may be suitable for them, though, once we get through the cycle.
Right. And when is that going to end?
That'd be good to know. That'd be useful information.
Slightly.
We're not seeing the signs of it as of yet. We're not seeing profits roll over, the yield curve invert.
No. So, but giving them the tools that will be available when it is, you know, when it does roll, what then? Are you going to go into cash? Are you going to go into, you know, 60-40, 40-60? What, you know, are you going to buy puts? Are you going to do an inversion of the indexes? You know, what's your plan? Malik would be pretty much all in cash, right?
Now the earnings estimates are still strong. Is it interesting thing about it? This is the first run, isn't it, Tyler, today, where you got more down, more cuts than increases?
Yeah, right. But I mean, even for the companies that we're holding, I just kind of scrolled through it. I didn't see, you know, a ton of companies that we hold getting cut. So, you know, for what we do.
The interesting thing about this cycle is a lot of stocks are falling off and the earnings aren't any worse. The earnings are going up and the stocks are going down. It would be interesting, Tyler, though, if it's simple to look through that list of the 100 or so, what was it, 111 earnings estimate cuts, if it's simple to calculate which sectors were the top three. That'd be useful information for all of us as we talk to clients, especially for the urgency of,
right.
You know, we've got some sectors that are really showing signs of fundamental weakness.
So,
yeah, they don't give me the, they give me the industry, not the sector.
Well, that, yeah, just whichever category is simple to find, that would be enough for us to have a talking point on it.
Look, most clients aren't as sophisticated as you guys are and I am. But that doesn't mean that they don't want you to be sophisticated with them, okay, in terms of having ideas. They want you to be smart, right, and anticipate. So the question is, how can we be smart and anticipate? And how can we look different than the competition and be better? Even though I'm on the edges, right? So that's what I'm talking about. Being, you know, not saying change the big picture. I'm just saying, how can we be smart around the edges and make the clients feel like we're doing something? I mean, taking tax losses, right? Swapping.
That's a great idea. Right now, we've got some pretty big gains in the growth account year to date, and in a lot of managed accounts.
Yep. Okay, so now's the time to be doing the business plan. I know it's the time to get these two new accounts, and everybody can work on that. So, you know, Kim, Trent, you guys, obviously, the three of you, so you can go out and get, you know, two or three accounts now to fill the void before the end of the year because of your relationships.
Yeah. Right.
So you can, you can use the endless chain referral system. You can use NIPSA. You can use networking, giving. Remember, whenever you want to get more, you give more. Mm-hmm. So if you're feeling your pipeline of introductions is getting low, then start to introduce more. You went back and did the anniversary calendar, right, on introductions given and the thank you business introductions given?
Yeah, I don't know if we have it all done, but we have worked on it.
Yeah. So there's a good acquisition strategy. You can build that into a calendar and start popping them in. And anytime you have free time, you can go back and look at those introductions. And then call the people. That's an easy one. So here's what we're working on. I'm trying to get my teams to do is to build their business plans for the new year. So have you guys built a new business plan yet?
We met actually as a team last week and started working through that as far as where we are right now and what we want to plan for next year.
Okay, so I had goals for this year, up 8% estimated, PCs at 4.3. Where will you come in?
I'll have to extrapolate it out. Our year-to-date tracking went awry when we did the bulk transfer. Numbers changed. We have a hard time seeing the annualized numbers right now. It was right around there.
Yeah, and then you had 705 million, I think, in assets.
That's I'm sure that's
right?
Down this week.
That's, I think we were right at that before last week.
Yeah.
Okay. The number of clients is still like 167?
Yeah.
Probably a little higher, but not
that
much.
That was, yeah, exactly. It's right around there.
Okay.
And that was pre-Tyler. So we shed a couple more accounts since then, so we're probably like 175 now with Tyler.
Okay. All right, so, I mean, my suggestion, unless you have an objection, is to stick with the five-star model and build your business plan around that so it's comprehensive.
Okay.
All right. And so what would I do to build the business plan for 2019? I would take each one of the planning. I would take planning. And who's ever in charge, Kim, you are probably directing planning, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so what you need to do is figure out where am I now and where do I want to be by the end of the year in terms of number of plans done and then how many reviews do I want to do?
Okay.
Things have changed, even, for example, for me. I mean, things have changed a lot. So,
Kim's got the highest percentage of clients of Wealth Outlook in our division or in the market. What Jen mentioned last week, Kim?
Yeah.
Highest percentage of clients with the Wealth Outlook.
That's great. So in terms of what do you think, you know, the clients are looking at by the way, I have some quiet good news for you guys.
Ah.
I checked with Terry, and, you know, fee compression is a big deal, right?
Right.
And not being able to deduct your fee is a big deal. As a corporation, NAP Investments, there's a line on there for fees. According to her, I'm going to continue to be able to deduct my fee.
Really?
Right.
Because you're in an LLC?
Because I'm in an LLC.
Wow.
Not sure it's because of that or Supernova or what. But according to her, on the form, there's still a line for 2018.
Nice.
Well, that's a big deal for you guys. So if I were you, I would check with that and see if it's actually correct. So for some people, that's going to be $30,000 or $40,000.
Yeah, that's huge.
Nice.
Okay, so that's worth it for them to then incorporate. And I did it for protection of my assets, right?
Right.
I mean, that's why I made NAP Investments LLC, was so that it gave me more protection. in case someone sued us, couldn't get my company. Therefore, they can't get my assets. Lo and behold, if that gives me the ability to deduct a fee, then that's pretty smart. So whatever it costs me, not much, maybe a couple thousand dollars to incorporate, well, it's really worth it.
Absolutely.
Now, maybe the IRS will come back next year or 2 years from now and say, no, you can't do that. But for the next couple of years, that's probably still going to hold up.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's a big deal. So you can call Terry and check on it, and then you can check with some others. Just quietly, don't raise the IRS's. But you know, when we were doing, we could do back in the 70s, for a couple of years we could do silver strata to turn capital gains into ordinary income. And the same thing was true with options. And we got away with it for a couple of years. We could actually take a person's ordinary income and turn it into I could create ordinary income losses, offset their ordinary income in options. And then they did that because they wanted to tax options as ordinary income. What they didn't realize when they made that tax ruling was that it would create ordinary income losses. And so you could deduct them. And I did that for 2 years. And nobody understood it, and clients didn't even believe it. But we did it, and we were successful with it. I built a pretty good business around that. So you just buy and sell at the same time options and lift the leg of the loser and create a $60,000 ordinary income loss to offset their ordinary income. So they pay no taxes. It was very clever.
Wonderful thing.
Yeah, it was a wonderful thing. It didn't matter which way you went. You just, you know, left the one that lost. So you just do a simple straddle, you know. So anyway, so there are the times where the tax law isn't quite perfect because they can't think of everything. So this may last a couple of years, and if so, great for us.
Right.
Okay. That's why I say do it quietly. Don't call the IRS. Anyway. All right. So back to the business plan. How did we run out of time? This is terrible. Anyway, the business plan, you do the gap analysis in each one of the areas. So to make it simple, it's where are we now, where do we want to be, and how are we going to get there? Okay? So planning, implementation, brand management, which is Supernova, marketing, and leadership. Clearly the biggest one is marketing. So just to refresh, who's in charge of what with your team? Kim, you're in charge of...
I'm in charge of planning, yes.
Okay. Tyler's doing business development. I think Kim and I are really working together on business management and leadership. Linda and Sherry run with administration on their own. And then brand management, marketing, I'd say that all falls within Tyler.
Yeah,
and then investments, I'm leading that up, but Tyler's doing a lot of the day-to-day research now on investments.
Tyler is, or you are?
Tyler's doing some of the backbone research on investing for growth and on our managers.
Yeah, but you're in charge of it.
Right.
Sorry, Trent.
We're working together on it. But yeah, I own it. I'm answering for it.
I'm the intern on investments.
And then who is Linda in charge of the Supernova and operations?
They really work together on it. They've got different strengths, and I'd say Sherry really measures more and looks at the firm goals and measures where they are nationally. Is that right, Kim?
Yes, that would be correct.
Okay. And then marketing is Tyler. And then leadership. I don't like shared leadership, but you can do that if you want.
I think Trent really runs with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so the game here is if Linda or Sherry, who's in charge of scheduling? Do they split the book or do they do it?
Well, it's usually our third person, but right now we just have an intern, so they both are doing it.
Okay, so they kind of split that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're splitting it on their alphabet.
And when do you have your regularly scheduled meeting? Are you doing the Monday and Friday?
FAA? We meet as FAs once a week, and then we meet with the team once a month.
Okay. All right.
And then we're constantly checking in, especially with our new arrangement with people setting together. We're in constant contact.
Good.
As far as in-depth.
I've got to run, but just go ahead, and each one of you write out a one-pager and send it to me in about 14 days. Is that okay?
Yes. Rob, we have a call today at 4. Are you still okay with that?
I'm good, yeah.
Okay.
All right, so so you each get it, right? You're going to write out how you're going to, what are your goals, why are their goals, you know, if you're doing marketing, what's your goal in terms of assets, PCs that you need to bring in, and then how do you get those PCs? And the same thing, Trent, with leadership. What are your, you really would set the asset goal and production goals, and then turn it over to Tyler to figure out how to get there. Okay, that's the idea.
Right.
Okay.
The what, why, and how.
Yeah.
Thanks, Rob.
Very good.
Right.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you guys.
Good deal. Thanks. See ya. Bye-bye. Bye.